Chapter 41. Tom applies his knife to the oyster. The next day, at 10 o'clock, Tom was on his way to St. Ogg's to see his Uncle Dean, who was to come home last night, his aunt had said. And Tom had made up his mind that his Uncle Dean was the right person to ask for advice about getting some employment. He was in a great way of business. He had not the narrow notions of Uncle Glegg, and he had risen in the world on a scale of advancement which accorded with Tom's ambition. It was a dark, chill, misty morning, likely to end in rain, one of those mornings when even happy people take refuge in their hopes. And Tom was very unhappy. He felt the humiliation as well as the prospective hardships of his lot with all the keenness of a proud nature, and with all his resolute dutifulness toward his father there mingled an irrepressible indignation against him which gave misfortune the less endurable aspect of a wrong. Since these were the consequences of going to law, his father was really blamable, as his aunts and uncles had always said he was, and it was a significant indication of Tom's character that though he thought his aunts ought to do something more for his mother, he felt nothing like Maggie's violent resentment against them for showing no eager tenderness and generosity. There were no impulses in Tom that led him to expect what did not present itself to him as a right to be demanded. Why should people give away their money plentifully to those who had not taken care of their own money? Tom saw some justice in severity, and all the more because he had confidence in himself that he should never deserve that just severity. It was very hard upon him that he should be put at this disadvantage in life by his father's want of prudence, but he was not going to complain and to find fault with people because they did not make everything easy for him. He would ask no one to help him more than to give him work and pay him for it. Poor Tom was not without his hopes to take refuge in under the chill damp imprisonment of the December fog, which seemed only like a part of his home troubles. At 16, the mind that has the strongest affinity for fact cannot escape illusion and self-flattery, and Tom, in sketching his future, had no other guide in arranging his facts than the suggestions of his own brave self-reliance. Both Mr. Glegg and Mr. Dean, he knew, had been very poor ones. He did not want to save money slowly and retire on a moderate fortune like his Uncle Glegg, but he would be like his Uncle Dean, get a situation in some great house of business and rise fast. He had scarcely seen anything of his Uncle Dean for the last 3 years the two families had been getting wider apart, but for this very reason Tom was the more hopeful about applying to him. His Uncle Glegg, he felt sure, would never encourage any spirited project, but he had a vague imposing idea of the resources at his Uncle Dean's command. He had heard his father say, long ago, how Dean had made himself so valuable to Guest & Company that they were glad enough to offer him a share in the business. That was what Tom resolved he would do. It was intolerable to think of being poor and looked down upon all one's life. He would provide for his mother and sister and make everyone say that he was a man of high character. He leaped over the years in this way, and, in the haste of strong purpose and strong desire, did not see how they would be made up of slow days, hours, and minutes. By the time he had crossed the stone bridge over the Floss and was entering St. Ogg's, he was thinking that he would buy his father's mill and land again when he was rich enough, and improve the house and live there. He should prefer it to any smarter, newer place, and he could keep as many horses and dogs as he liked. Walking along the street with a firm, rapid step, at this point in his reverie he was startled by someone who had crossed without his notice, and who said to him in a rough, familiar voice, "Why, Master Tom, how's your father this morning?" It was a publican of St. Ogg's, one of his father's customers. Tom disliked being spoken to just then, but he said civilly, "He's still very ill, thank you." "Hey, it's been a sore chance for you, young man, hasn't it, this lawsuit turning out against him?" said the publican, with a confused, beery idea of being good-natured. Tom reddened and passed on. he would have felt it like the handling of a bruise, even if there had been the most polite and delicate reference to his position. "That's Tulliver's son," said the publican to a grocer standing on the adjacent doorstep. "Ah," said the grocer, "I thought I knew his features. He takes after his mother's family. She was a Dodson. He's a fine, straight youth. What's he been brought up to? Oh, to turn up his nose at his father's customers, and be a fine gentleman, not much else, I think." Tom, roused from his dream of the future to a thorough consciousness of the present, made all the greater haste to reach the warehouse offices of Guest & Company, where he expected to find his Uncle Dean. But this was Mr. Dean's morning at the band, a clerk told him, and with some contempt for his ignorance, Mr. Dean was not to be found in River Street on a Thursday morning. At the bank, Tom was admitted into the private room where his uncle was, immediately after sending in his name. Mr. Dean was auditing accounts, but he looked up as Tom entered, and putting out his hand, said, "Well, Tom, nothing fresh the matter at home, I hope? How's your father?" "Much the same, thank you, Uncle," said Tom, feeling nervous. "But I want to speak to you, please, when you're at liberty." Sit down," said Mr. Dean, relapsing into his accounts, in which he and the managing clerk remained so absorbed for the next half hour that Tom began to wonder whether he should have to sit in this way till the bank closed. There seemed so little tendency toward a conclusion in the quiet, monotonous procedure of these sleek, prosperous men of business. Would his uncle give him a place in the bank? It would be very dull, prosy work, he thought, writing there forever to the loud ticking of a timepiece. He preferred some other way of getting rich. But at last there was a change. His uncle took a pen and wrote something with a flourish at the end. "You'll just step up to Tory's now, Mr. Spence, will you?" said Mr. Dean, and the clock suddenly became less loud and deliberate in Tom's ears. "Well, Tom," said Mr. Dean, when they were alone, turning his substantial person a little in his chair and taking out his snuff box, "what's the business, my boy, what's the business?" Mr. Dean, who had heard from his wife what had passed the day before, thought Tom was come to appeal to him for some means of averting the sale. "I hope you'll excuse me for troubling you, Uncle," said Tom, coloring, but speaking in a tone which, though tremulous, had a certain proud independence in it. "But I thought you were the best person to advise me what to do." "Ah," said Mr. Dean, reserving his pinch of snuff and looking at Tom with new attention, "let us hear." "I want to get a situation, Uncle, so that I may earn some money," said Tom, who never fell into circumlocution. "A situation?" said Mr. Dean, and then took his pinch of snuff with elaborate justice to each nostril. Tom thought snuff taking a most provoking habit. "Why, let me see, how old are you?" said Mr. Dean, as he threw himself backward again. 16. "I mean, I am going in 17, said Tom, hoping his uncle noticed how much beard he had. "Let me see, your father had some notion of making you an engineer, I think. But I don't think I could get any money at that for a long while, could I?" "That's true, but people don't get much money at anything, my boy, when they're only 16. You've had a good deal of schooling, however. I suppose you're pretty well up in accounts, eh? You understand bookkeeping?" "No," said Tom, rather falteringly. I was in practice. "But Mr. Stelling says I write a good hand, Uncle." "That's my writing," added Tom, laying on the table a copy of the list he had made yesterday. "Ah, that's good, that's good. But, you see, the best hand in the world'll not get you a better place than a copying clerk's, if you know nothing of bookkeeping, nothing of accounts. And a copying clerk's a cheap article. But what have you been learning at school, then?" Mr. Dean had not occupied himself with methods of education, and had no precise conception of what went forward in expensive schools. "We learned Latin," said Tom, pausing a little between each item, as if he were turning over the books in his school desk to assist his memory. Good deal of Latin, and the last year I did themes, 1 week in Latin and one in English, and Greek and Roman history, and Euclid, and I began algebra, but I left it off again, and we had 1 day every week for arithmetic. Then I used to have drawing lessons, and there were several other books we either read or learned out of, English poetry, and Horry Pauline and Blair's rhetoric, the last half. Mr. Dean tapped his snuff box again and screwed up his mouth. He felt in the position of many estimable persons when they had read the new tariff and found how many commodities were imported of which they knew nothing. Like a cautious man of business, he was not going to speak rashly of a raw material in which he had had no experience. But the presumption was that if it had been good for anything, so successful a man as himself would hardly have been ignorant of it. About Latin he had an opinion, and thought that in case of another war, since people would no longer wear hair powder, it would be well to put a tax upon Latin, as a luxury much run upon by the higher classes, and not telling it all on the ship-owning department. But, for what he knew, the whore Pauline might be something less neutral. On the whole, this list of acquirements gave him a sort of repulsion toward poor Tom. Well, he said at last, in rather a cold, sardonic tone, you've had 3 years at these things, you must be pretty strong in 'em. Hadn't you better take up some line, where they'll come in handy? Tom colored, and burst out, with new energy. I'd rather not have any employment of that sort, Uncle. I don't like Latin and those things. I don't know what I could do with 'em, unless I went as usher in a school. And I don't know them well enough for that. Besides, I would as soon carry a pair of panniers. I don't want to be that sort of person. I should like to enter into some business, where I can get on, a manly business, where I should have to look after things, and get credit for what I did. And I shall want to keep my mother and sister. Ah, young gentleman, said Mr. Dean, with that tendency to repress youthful hopes which stout and successful men of 50 find one of their easiest duties, that's sooner said than done, sooner said than done. But didn't you get on in that way, Uncle? Said Tom, a little irritated that Mr. Dean did not enter more rapidly into his views. I mean, didn't you rise from one place to another through your abilities and good conduct? Sir, said Mr. Dean, spreading himself in his chair a little, and entering with great readiness into a retrospect of his own career. But I'll tell you how I got on. It wasn't by getting astride a stick, and thinking it would turn into a horse, if I sat on it long enough. I kept my eyes and ears open, sir, and I wasn't too fond of my own back, and I made my master's interest my own. Why, with only looking into what went on in the mill, I found out how there was a waste of 500 a year that might be hindered. Why, sir, I hadn't more schooling to begin with than a charity boy, but I saw pretty soon that I couldn't get on far enough without mastering accounts, and I learned them between working hours after I'd been unlading. Look here. Mr. Dean opened a book and pointed to the page. I write a good hand enough, and I'll match anybody at all sorts of reckoning by the head. And I got it all by hard work, and paid for it out of my own earnings, often out of my own dinner and supper. And I looked into the nature of all the things we had to do in the business, and picked up knowledge as I went about my work, and turned it over in my head. Why, I'm no mechanic, I never pretended to be, but I've thought of a thing or two that the mechanics never thought of, and it's made a fine difference in our returns. And there isn't an article shipped or unshipped at our wharf, but I know the quality of it. If I got places, sir, it was because I made myself fit for 'em. If you want to slip into a round hole, you must make a ball of yourself. That's where it is. Mr. Dean tapped his box again. He had been led on by pure enthusiasm in his subject, and had really forgotten what bearing this retrospective survey had on his listener. He had found occasion for saying the same thing more than once before, and was not distinctly aware that he had not his port wine before him. "Well, Uncle," said Tom, with a slight complaint in his tone, "that's what I should like to do. Can't I get on in the same way?" "In the same way?" said Mr. Dean, eyeing Tom with quiet deliberation. "There go two or three questions to that, Master Tom. That depends on what sort of material you are, to begin with, and whether you've been put into the right mill. But I'll tell you what it is. Your poor father went the wrong way to work in giving you an education. It wasn't my business, and I didn't interfere, but it is as I thought it would be. You've had a sort of learning that's all very well for a young fellow like our Mr. Stephen Guest, who'll have nothing to do but sign checks all his life, and may as well have Latin inside his head as any other sort of stuffing." "But, Uncle," said Tom, earnestly, "I don't see why the Latin need hinder me from getting on in business. I shall soon forget it all. It makes no difference to me. I had to do my lessons at school, but I always thought they'd never be of any use to me afterward. I didn't care about them." Eh, that's all very well," said Mr. Dean, "but it doesn't alter what I was going to say. Your Latin and rigmarole may soon dry off you, but you'll be but a bare stick after that. Besides, it's whitened your hands, and taken the rough work out of you. And what do you know? Why, you know nothing about bookkeeping, to begin with, and not so much of reckoning as a common shopman. You'll have to begin at a low round of the ladder, let me tell you, if you mean to get on in life. It's no use for getting the education your father's been paying for, if you don't give yourself a new one." Tom bit his lips hard. He felt as if the tears were rising, and he would rather die than let them. "You want me to help you to a situation," Mr. Dean went on. "Well, I've no fault to find with that. I'm willing to do something for you. But you youngsters nowadays think you're to begin with living well and working easy. You've no notion of running afoot before you get horseback. Now, you must remember what you are. You're a lad of 16, trained to nothing particular. There's heaps of your sort, like so many pebbles, made to fit in nowhere. Well, you might be apprenticed to some business, a chemist's and druggist's perhaps. Your Latin might come in a bit there," Tom was going to speak, but Mr. Dean put up his hand and said, "Gutenberg edition. End of chapter."